To answer is human, to question is divine. Welcome to the world of the Hidden Gateway, an exhilarating podcast exploring the concepts humans have been struggling with since the dawn of existence, such as, who are we? Is there such a thing as good and evil, or are they arbitrary constructs? Does the paranormal exist? How can we evolve to a higher state? Can our mind influence what we term as reality? Providing a transcendental approach combined with hard-nosed humanistic analysis, we invite you on a journey to question your worldview in this theater of life. Join our host, Justin Williams, as he explores the outer realms of faith, the supernatural, human potential, and even our concepts of the universal creator with a fascinating array of guests. This is the unseen world, magical, mysterious, and mystical, where your only limitation is your imagination. This is the Hidden Gateway.
Welcome back to the Hidden Gateway podcast. I am your host, Justin Williams. Now, before we get started with this week's show, I just want to ask, if you haven't done so already, please like and subscribe to the show on both Spotify and Apple Podcasts. This will be a tremendous help for us to reach an even larger audience across all platforms. As always, your support is greatly appreciated, and today we welcome Ralph Marzen to the show. Ralph is a clinical psychologist and trauma therapist with over 20 years' experience of working with individuals and groups. He is a NARM teacher as well as the founder of Embodied Trauma Healing and teaches workshops and seminars internationally. Ralph teaches a path of integrated spirituality that combines core trauma healing and embodied non-duality. Ralph, welcome to Hidden Gateway Podcast. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Justin. Thank you. It's great talking to you.
You as well. So, you know, Ralph, I want to start off by you just taking a few minutes to tell the audience a little bit about your beginnings and maybe a pivotal point that led you to what you're doing today. I guess my question is there anything at any point in time that you felt, wow, this is it for me, this is what I need to be doing?
Yeah, thanks. Great question. There's a bunch of those pivotal points, but the first one that comes to mind is a relatively recent one. That's only, I believe, 2.5 years ago. Where I finally found what I'd been looking for all these years. And I'm referring to a spiritual awakening that I experienced while being with my dear friends, heart friends, and teachers, Saniel Bonder and Linda Groves Bonder, who I believe you also had the podcast. And that was a turning point in my life. Since then, I feel like I've entered a completely different way of living. And that's informed, of course, my own personal life as well as my professional life. And I feel since then I'm in a different position to, talk about the type of integrated spirituality that I'm most interested in talking about and inspiring people to access.
I love it. That's awesome. You know, every time I hear of someone that had a spiritual awakening and they knew immediately that they found themselves and then they step into their purpose in return to help others. I mean, it really doesn't get any better than that. If you don't mind, you know, I'm so curious to know about what your spiritual awakening was like. You know, what did you experience, and not only how it made you feel, but what are some of the greatest gifts or lessons that you learned from it?
Yeah, you know, at the core of it, I'd say it's actually more than anything, it's a shift in identity, you know. Prior to that awakening, I think I was primarily still experiencing myself just on the level of identity as a separate something. So this is me, and there's the world outside. And although, of course, I can still access that type of perception or framework, for the most part, the level of identity now has shifted to just more like an inclusive one, where there isn't that sense of duality anymore between inside and outside. There's just like it's more like an experience of oneness. And that, of course, I mean, it sounds like fancy words, but experientially, that's a huge shift. there's an immediacy that comes with that, and an intimacy with what arises, including other humans. That's actually extremely beautiful. And like, you know, on the level of how that touches, well, in this case, me, even emotionally on all levels. So coming back to that identity piece, it's more like now a way of living in and as totality identity, like all of it, as opposed to before it was more fragmented and more separation, more splitting. And so something really has landed in a way that was just like different, you know, different, fundamentally different.
Excellent, excellent. And I know for me and a lot of others, one thing that, you know, a lot of people experience when they go through this spiritual awakening is a certain awareness about themselves, right? And for me, that awareness was I needed healing because of some of the things that I experienced in my childhood at the hands of my father. And then so I went through this beautiful healing process, right, that has changed my life forever. Have you, did something similar happen with you where you realized that, hey, you know, I have some things that I need to work through, maybe some trauma that I experienced in my life at some point, or you may have been aware about it already and thought that you went through the healing process and were okay, but once you went through that spiritual awakening, you realized that it was maybe a bit deeper and you had to work on some additional things. Tell me about that.
Yeah, great question. Yeah, the truth is I can't remember a time in my life where that drive wasn't there. So I cannot tell you, oh, wow, it started when I was 5 and a half or 13 and a half. I don't know. But what I do know is that as long as I can remember, I've always had this sense that there is some work to be done at like on an inner level, that something felt off. There's pain, you know,
right.
From as far back as I can remember, I was carrying around this sense of, like in Buddhism, they call this dukkha, which means just its basic dissatisfaction, you know. And I knew like there's something that I got to figure out here in order to like straighten this thing back up. And so this sense of looking, seeking was always there. Mm. I don't fundamentally know where it comes from. I can certainly link it to very early trauma that I experienced. I actually had a really good childhood. But very, very early in my life, at the very beginning of my life, right down to the time I spent in my mother's womb, there was just a lot of difficult, traumatic stuff. So I feel like the entire rest of my life I've spent unpicking this and trying to heal it. So this has been an ongoing journey for so many years, and it's totally still ongoing, despite that awakening that I told you about. Now, that doesn't mean at all that journey of healing those traumatized and unhealed parts isn't ongoing. As a matter of fact, with the vastly increased space that opened up through the awakening, there's even more material coming up to be looked at, to be addressed, to be healed. So I believe that that journey is ongoing for myself and for anybody. As long as we hang out in these human bodies, there'll always be more pieces to bring home and to heal. And maybe at some point we're pretty clear with our own personal material. But then, you know, we get to the more collective stuff, our ancestral lineage, transgenerational things, and anything in the human heart that hasn't been brought home yet, then we address that. So this is, I don't believe there's ever an end point to that, you know?
Wow, that is so good. And I couldn't agree more. And I don't know if I've ever shared this on my show, but, you know, the audience knows, as I mentioned, I went through a spiritual healing and an awareness which led to a healing that I started. And, you know, the last few years, you know, I'm doing good. I'm feeling good. You know, I feel as if my life has changed forever. But then, you know, earlier this year, some other things came up and it really made me think like, wow, okay, I still have a ways to go. So that definitely speaks to what you just said in regards to it being an ongoing journey. You know, it's like the universe presents things that if you weren't aware of before, as you grow in your spirituality, because your awareness becomes greater. And it's just this beautiful relationship, for me at least, of knowing myself and having this awareness and being aware of what the universe is doing and continues to do in my life, which helps rise my consciousness level, which in return I use to help others in my light work efforts in this world. Does that kind of make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. The only addition that I would make is that so it's maybe just a different way of speaking, but like when you say the universe keeps presenting new material to you, for sure that makes sense. And at an even deeper level than that, I would say it's actually just you yourself, because as you know, you drop into this experience of, yeah, what I like to call totality, identity, this space of oneness, you actually get to realize there's only you. There isn't really this world out there in the universe doing things to you. It's like you're just kind of playing this mysterious game with yourself, and everything that seems to come at you or to you from so-called outside is actually just a reflection. So ultimately, we're really just in this hall of mirrors. And I think the name of the game is just to, I don't know, maybe you could call it raise your vibration. That sounds a little new agey, but just to heal more, to become more whole, and to land more deeply in the heart. And so that's maybe a slightly different framework that I'm offering. But apart from that, I couldn't agree with you more. There's always new pieces. And like you're saying, it's like the wider we become in our awareness, the more space there is for things to show up that we can then address. But we can address them from a different place because we have more space, and potentially the heart has opened a bit, so we can look at these things that have never been healed or loved from a place of more capacity. And that's beautiful, because I think we only in a way ever get given, to use that way of speaking, as much as we can actually handle on some level. And so then the next piece that's presenting itself, that's got to be just right for me at this moment in time, with the level of awareness and capacity and connection to the heart that I actually have. And just want to add a little disclaimer here, and that doesn't mean, you know, when terrible things happen to people, that I'm saying, yeah, this is good for them and they're ready for that. Maybe on some level that's true, but of course on the human level, that would be profoundly disrespectful. So I'm talking more about the inner journey of our ongoing healing of our trauma and the collective trauma that tends to also kind of spiral. We get to readdress themes, and I'm sure you know this from your own journey. We get to readdress themes that we've already, you know, addressed at an subtler level, and with even more refinement and even deeper to the core. So it's kind of a spiral-like process, and you know, if in a way, it's beautiful because it gives us opportunity to grow and expand and then show up differently to yourself, to ourselves, and to, just as you said, to the people that we interact with and are here to serve.
Yeah. And so, Ralph, it's this ongoing journey of healing. Is that why we're here, or one of the main reasons you think why we're here, just to continuously heal? It's almost as if, you know, when I think about that, it's like, it tells me we come to this place just so broken, you know? And so there's this healing, or maybe we don't come broken. Maybe as soon as we enter this realm, we have all this programming and these different experiences that break us, so we get broken down, because maybe we come here whole. You know, we come through the womb, and maybe we are what maybe some people may think is perfect, you know, if that's even a real thing. You know, maybe it's just we are just as is, but at some point, if we don't come here broken, we become broken, and then we go through this, if we choose to, this forever process of healing. Is that why we're here? I would think, or it seems like that may be part of the reason why we're here, amongst other things, right? And you know, we talk about stepping to our purpose and helping humanity and things like that.
Yeah. You know, the truth is, Justin, I don't know why we're here. I don't know if anybody really does know why we're here, ultimately. But it seems as if we exist as human beings in a kind of simultaneity. And I think on some level, we are profoundly whole and kind of like these beings of light and love and purity. So anything but broken. However, on another level, we do seem to require a level of fracturedness or brokenness in order to play the game here on this plane. You know, this is the realm of duality. This is the realm of light and dark, of love and hate, of waking and sleeping, of living and dying. This is just the game we're playing here. Why that is, I have no idea. But within us playing this game of duality that also comes with pain, pleasure and pain, everything, it does seem like that I don't know if it's the invitation or the purpose is for us to wake up in the middle of playing that game and step into the conscious embodiment of that simultaneity of being this, not perhaps broken, but at least wounded human, while being at the same time this being of light and love and complete wholeness. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's if I can see a purpose, then that would be the purpose to step into and then learn to live from that kind of simultaneity, one foot in both worlds, you know, that which also I think then allows us to show up with more compassion and love, like in this broken world, you know, because we have one foot outside and we know who we and then therefore everybody else we meet actually is. And then it allows us to meet ourselves in each other just from a different place.
Wow, that's so good. That is so good. I mean, it's so important. As you speak through that, it came to me that it's so important to know that we all are truly connected, and everybody plays a role in our journey, in our growth, in our challenges, and in everything we experience. That's really good, Ralph. It really is.
Can I take this to one level even deeper? Because I'm I'm just having this like literal, visceral experience of, as I'm talking to you here, I believe the podcast is just going to be audio, but you and I were looking at each other speaking. So you, Justin, appear in me, because like, how else would I even receive you through my senses? So you appear in me. I could even say as me. So it's like, where is the separation? Like, it's I'd have to add another conceptual layer of putting that barrier between you and I. But however, as I'm receiving you in me, and this is not abstract, this is an actual experience that I'm having right now. That to me is kind of love. Like I feel you kind of, if I'd say as connected or part of me, that's true, but even as myself, I could say, like, where's the boundary, you know? So that's, you know, I mentioned in the beginning, this deep intimacy, that is, it's quite profound, you know?
That is very profound. And as you were saying that, it made me think of some stories I've heard in the past regarding twins, you know, identical twins, where, you know, one twin could be maybe in the States and the other one could be in Amsterdam, and one twin has a pain or feels something that the other one can feel it as well. And obviously, since they're those identical twins, they have that bond that I can't explain. But after you said that, it's like, well, maybe we all have that bond. But since me and you are here talking and having this deep conversation, we're able to, that comes through, you know, as like the twins.
Yeah, beautifully put, exactly. And the example of the twins just shows that on the level of consciousness, you know, like this whole distinction of time and space, you're here and there and you're there. I'm here and you're there, and therefore we cannot connect. It doesn't hold up. Because it's true, and there's so many of these stories when a mother, you know, knows that their child who's on a different continent has an accident. It's like, so there is a profound connection. Right. And when we really like put our attention to it, like you and I are doing right now, it just becomes so evident that this like habitual sense of separation that we all carry is, in a way, it doesn't really hold up. Of course, on some level, it's true. You have your zip code, I have mine. So, you know, so there, of course, there's some level of separation, but really on the level of consciousness, or I could say the heart, there really isn't any. And that's, I mean, to me, that's the definition of love and of real connection. It's like, why would I want to harm you if I experience you so intimately in me and as me? It just doesn't make sense, you know. It's like shooting myself in the foot.
Right. And see, that's what it is, Ralph, that connection of love, right? And that is something I believe that the majority, if not most, or if not all, are able to do. But, you know, in this realm, in this reality, there's so many distractions. There's so many things that do not allow us, or that even may want to prevent us from connecting like that, right? Because I'm a firm believer in spiritual warfare, you know, that there are unseen forces of both light and dark, and it's this spiritual warfare going on. And I don't want to kind of get off topic here, right? But, you know, there I really believe that, you know, that's how we're meant to be. You know, that connection is, as you explained. But again, there's just so many hurdles, so much programming, so many things that are preventing that to happen. However, like you had your spiritual awakening awakening a couple years ago, like I had mine a few years ago, like a lot of people have theirs. We see it happening more and more, and people having this awareness of what's happening in this world today with this this awakening going on. And it's I feel like we're trending in a new direction here, even though it seems to be the most chaos and confusion that I've ever seen in my lifetime. You know, you got all that going on, but it's also something else going on too, you know.
Beautiful, Justin. There's so much in what you just said, and it's true. Both are true, you know, on this plane of duality. It almost seems like both the, maybe we can call them forces of light and the forces of darkness, are both amplifying. And whether that's a spiritual warfare, whether there's actual beings around doing this, who knows, but it's almost not even primarily important to me, but we can see like an amplification of this apparent split between light and dark. And as there's more and more, you know, tragedy and difficulty and separation and trauma happening in the world, at the same time, as you're saying correctly, there's also like a collective awakening that's happening.
Yeah.
So, and more people are popping through that, you know, like veil of separation into their true essence as freedom and love. And so, there seems to be that process happening. Why that is, I don't know. And then the other thing I wanted to comment on is that it's like, and you touched on this, whether again, there's forces at play, spiritual warfare. I think this is maybe just a different frame. Another frame we can use is really just trauma. It's like, there is just so much trauma, individual trauma and collective trauma going on in the space. And the more traumatized humans are, the more confused they get, the more the hearts get injured, and therefore they it's almost like they don't function properly anymore. They don't have access to the vibration of love, and everything goes really off track the more trauma a system carries, whether it's an individual person, a system, or collective system. So stuff just doesn't work anymore. It goes out of coherence. And so therefore trauma healing is really what we're needing to do as a species, you know, to restore ourselves back to balance. And in order to regain access to our true identity as free beings that actually can meet each other in the heart.
Excellent. Very good. As you were saying that made me think of my next question for you. I would like for you, if you would please, to summarize the impact of developmental trauma on a person's body and nervous systems, their emotions and sense of identity. Because I know, as I think back when I went through a lot of my trauma as a kid, you know, I remember looking, because my dad was like this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type character, right? He could be the nicest guy in the world, very kind, do anything for you. But he had issues with alcohol, okay? And then when he would drink and become drunk, that's when he would just be this monster of a guy. And for me, I never knew what guy I would get. So he would go to work. And then he worked afternoon, so he'd come home around 11 midnight. And during the summertime, I would sometimes be up when he arrived home. And I remember looking out the window, I would hear him pulling up, backing into the driveway, and then my heart would just start to race, you know. And this went on for years. And what I believe this did, this created some type of anxiety in me. This was my first episode of having anxiety, and that anxiety actually stuck with me for many years throughout my childhood. And even a great portion of my adult life, you know, and that also led to other things, because of his controlling nature, that caused me not to want to speak up, because his mantra was a child is to be seen and not heard, you know. He made all the decisions for me. So, you know, I never learned these critical thinking skills that are necessary, and these analytical skills that are necessary. And, you know, in regards to setting boundaries with people, you know, I became this people pleaser type of person. And looking back on it, it all stemmed from that because of what I experienced with him. So circling back to my question, just summarizing the impact of developmental trauma in the body, well, the nervous system, etc.
Well, before I geek out on that question, two things I want to say. One is, in a way, you've just answered your own question from the place of your own personal biographical story. It's the first thing I want to say. And the second thing I want to say is that I just so appreciate you for showing up in this way. And I was just really touched listening to you. And it shows me that you must have done like so much deep work on yourself that you can talk about your history and the way that you do, just with like so much clarity and spaciousness and connection with me as you're speaking. So that tells me you've must have done a lot of work, because the truth is, like you said, for your childhood and most of your adult life, you carried this anxiety with you. But for most people, unless they do significant inner work, well, that will be the rest of their lives. Most people would probably never really manage to get out of this basic anxiety. So that's how deep this goes. And so maybe if I may, I can just use your sharing to unpack a little bit more theoretically.
Please do.
I've only just met you, so I don't know more about your life than what you've just shared with me. But like, so a small child that is that kind of situation on the level of the nervous system will, of course, you know, have to go into some kind of hypervigilant state, because if you never know if your dad's going to come back as a really lovely guy or as an alcoholic, you know, abuser, then it's like the nervous system needs to rev up. You need to be on guard in order so that you can kind of protect yourself optimally.
Exactly.
So that then is, of course, then later on experienced as anxiety. But what it really, really relates to is just a nervous system that's revved up in a fight flight mode. And ideally, you know, when in, I don't know, like if we're hunted down by like a tiger or something, not that it would happen often, but then the nervous system will rev up to fight flight. But then if we run and sprint and do something with the energy successfully, then the nervous system can come back to balance. Mm-hmm. However, a child who's forced to live in that situation ongoingly never has the chance to reset the nervous system to balance. So then you get stuck in this hypervigilant, high arousal mode, and that's not comfortable at all. So then the anxiety starts building up. So that's like a short summary of what happens in the nervous system. And then on the level of, let's do one at a time because you brought so many levels. So on the level of emotions, it's also super difficult for a child like that, because, I mean, a child doesn't expect to be abused, and that's not what should be happening to a child. So then, of course, there will be probably many emotions like sadness, anger, all these natural emotions that will come up in a human when they're being abused by another human would come up. But since the other person, in this case, the parent is way more powerful, and there's no space for the child to express those emotions also kind of get stuck inside.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know, right? So then they never have an outlet, and the child is never being heard and acknowledged and supported in these emotions. So then they get internalized, and it's like they loop around in the system waiting for an outlet. And then here's the most tragic thing, because children, when they're being treated badly, they don't yet know that this is the parent's fault. Children have a habit of always making it their fault. Like, if it feels bad, that must mean I'm bad. This is the logic of a child.
Right.
They can't even, like, you know, like when a parent would do something like what you described to a child, it's not like, oh, my dad is not acting the way my dad should, and I have a right to like express my anger. None of that is available to a child. What's available is, man, this feels awful. That must means I'm awful and I deserve it. Yeah. And then so these feelings become internalized. And then, of course, that then becomes the identity. So then the child starts thinking about themselves in that way. There's something wrong with me. I'm broken. I deserve to be treated badly. Yeah. I don't deserve love. The world's out to get me. I have to people please in order to get by so nobody else attacks me. These are just some examples, but it can go to so many places. So this then becomes the way we think about ourselves, who and what we take ourselves to be. This becomes our identity, you know, and then later on we walk around in the world, and then this is how we feel and function and feel inside and experience ourselves and other people. It's very painful until we then begin to really look at this more closely from an adult perspective and begin to heal these pieces.
Well said. Yes. And absolutely, it's very painful. As you know, I know firsthand. And not only is it painful, it's confusing too, because, you know, you like, at least for me, you know, I knew I was different. I knew as an adult, but, you know, talking about in my adult years, that, you know, I didn't want to speak up for myself. I didn't want to set boundaries for myself and things like that.
And Ralph, for the longest, I walked around thinking I was okay. I didn't have an awareness of, hey, I need to heal. I just kind of thought, okay, I figured I was a bit different in that regard, but hey, I was just like, hey, that's me, you know, until I started to unpack that, you know.
Yeah, it's like water to a fish. If you've never known that you can feel differently, if the impact of developmental trauma has indeed become your identity, well, then of course you're going to feel somehow bad or not okay, but you can't really pinpoint it. And so then, yeah, it's like water to a fish. You don't know, it could be different. You know? And sadly, many people actually spend their whole lives like that. You got lucky for some reason. You had that kind of awakening inside, hey, there's something wrong and I can fix this and I can do stuff. So you got lucky there, or you were smarter. I don't know what the dynamics were, but for many people that spark of awareness never happens, you know? So then it's actually kind of living life in a kind of like in a prison, you know, we could say.
Oh, yes. Right? A prison. I love that. Yes, it is like living life in a prison, because as I went through my healing process and began to heal and feel better about who I am and know who I am and know that, hey, I'm a special man, and it's my right. It's my God-given right to be free of this. And then when it happened, it was such a liberating experience. It was a freedom, because it was this new person. I literally went through this spiritual death and rebirth, you know, and I tell people all the time, and my wife and I talk about it a lot. You know, I am not the same man today that I was 3, 4, 5 years ago. And, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. It really
is. That's
so
beautiful. Really touching to hear. It just like fills me with joy to hear about that level of transformation. And I mean, I take my hat off. I don't know what it took for you, or I bow to the grace that offered you this. I don't know what's what, but so beautiful. And one other thing I wanted to comment on, when you said now, like now you can claim, this is my God-given right to feel whole, you see? And this is everybody's God-given birthright to feel whole. It's just that, again, that dynamic that gets in with a lot of misattunement, abuse, neglect that a child experiences. And like I said, the child then learns to forget that this is their God-given right. They think that I'm wrong. I deserve to be treated badly because I'm bad. Mm-hmm. And so then that the whole thing gets actually turned around. And when that becomes available again, when then later on, as you said, you were able to reconnect with this core sense of, hey, I never deserved to be treated that way. That was, in this case, my father's fault. He should have treated me differently. Mm-hmm. What I deserve is something different, and is my God-given right to, you know, feel myself in my wholeness. That's the level of self-proclamation or also protest that wasn't possible for you as a child, or for anybody as a child when they're being treated badly. So you restored that, what has always been yours, you know?
Yeah, well said. And I think for me, you know, I was programmed to believe that I had this great dad. And, you know, as I said earlier, there were a lot of great aspects of him. He really taught me a lot. And as weird as it may sound, he actually taught me how to love. Again, it was these two characters, right, that I had these different experiences with. But in regards to my healing process, you know, meditation was the catalyst for me. You know, I began meditating, which is something that I knew about, but never tried doing. So I started meditating, and that put me in a position to be the observer, as cliche as it may sound, but it's true. It brought a sense of awareness for me. And in that moment, throughout that experience, it called for me having to be very, very vulnerable and very honest and very real with myself, you know, kind of, again, being the observer, being on the quote unquote outside looking in. And I had to be very real, very vulnerable with myself. I mean, points in time where I would literally be so vulnerable with myself and accepting what I experienced and knowing that it wasn't benefiting me emotionally and psychologically, to the point where I was in tears in my sacred space, in my closet, just tears of all types of mixed emotions, right? And then once I was able to be vulnerable, and it just wasn't a one-time thing, right? This is a span of a period of time. And then I guess I don't even want to say source or universe. Now, I guess it was me that was able to then push through that, bought more awareness, which then initiated change and healing. You know, I don't know if I said that right, but that's what art.
Yeah, yeah, really beautiful. Yeah, this isn't an easy journey to turn this around, because up until this point, like you said, when you developed a certain awareness that, hey, there's something off in my inner world and I can actually do something about it and take an honest look. Up until then, we tend to function mostly actually on, you call it programming. I like to call it like old kind of survival strategies, patterns, we could say. Okay. So it's kind of mostly automatic. It's not like reflected upon. There isn't a lot of awareness. And I think that's just a certain stage of human development, and there is nothing intrinsically wrong with it. It's just that it's not free, you know. However, then once we reach that point that you just talked about, when it's like you have this initial recognition, this awareness of what's actually going on, there's suffering and there's something I can do about it. From then on, the journey is not easy, and we have to become very honest with ourselves, very real and very vulnerable. That's probably like the most fitting word. We have to become very vulnerable with ourselves. We have to dare to feel more deeply than we have previously most likely allowed ourselves to, because we had to cut ourselves off from the deeply buried and repressed emotions. I mean, you know, I can share, I you don't want to know how many times I've in my life I've walked down the street and I literally broke down crying with every person that's come into my field, because of the rawness that I would experience. You know, it can still happen sometimes. It's no longer from a place of suffering. It's more from a place of just a recognition of the profound intimacy and the vulnerability that we all share. And it's like, whoa, there's another human being. And I don't know, they're on the phone, they're just walking. They don't even notice me. And it can still move me to tears. Like, wow, this is so precious, you know? So I know, I know about vulnerability. And I think that's the price of admission to our real self, is to like dare that. To live, you know, to also open up to our vulnerability. Because it's true. I mean, it's so vulnerable being human. One day we're all going to die anyway, and nobody really knows what's coming. So we're innately so vulnerable. And like one way to go about it is just to kind of try and pretend that's not so and shield ourselves. But the more honest we get with ourselves, we realize we're so vulnerable, you know, and it's not a bad thing. It's actually quite a beautiful thing.
Wow, Ralph, that is so powerful. That I'm never going to forget what you just said. You said vulnerability is the price of admission to knowing our true. Did you say true self?
I think so. I forgot, but there was a good line.
That was damn good. Thank you for that. Thank you. Oh goodness, I like that. Cool. So let's talk a little bit about what you do. What exactly is a NARM teacher? NARM. What is that?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I do. NARM is a fantastic model, like a psychotherapy model that works with developmental trauma, CPTSD, complex PTSD. My dear friend and teacher, Dr. Lawrence Heller, came up with it. To me, it's utterly phenomenal. It's a really powerful method that I trained in many years ago, and I've been on the faculty of that modality for a long time. And I teach it now, and yeah, because I have a background as a psychologist and psychotherapist, it's like kind of like my day job. So yeah, I love passing that on to other people in the helping profession, so that they can work with their clients or people that they work with more effectively, and actually recognize what it is that they're dealing with when people come to them with all these symptoms. And I love sharing with them about like the deeper structures, what actually lies underneath all the many symptoms that people can come to us with. So yeah, so that's one of the main things that I do. And I think overall, I'd probably describe my work as being on the intersection of trauma therapy and spirituality, spiritual awakening, non-dual, spirituality, I don't know how else to put it. So in that kind of continuum, that's where I see my work. And I do a bunch of things. I run seminars, retreats, whatnot, online groups, various things. I don't hear you anymore, Justin.
There you go.
That's great.
Yeah, seminars and retreats. That is really, really awesome. I had a ayahuasca retreat back in 21, which was phenomenally life-changing. And I definitely want to do some more retreats at some point. So maybe I'll be able to come to Amsterdam and connect with you for one of your retreats one time. That'd be really cool.
I would love that. I mean, I do them in many different places, but I'd love to also meet up in person one day. It'd be great.
Cool. Now, what type of people come to you today? I know you get all types of people from all walks of life, but my question is there one or two things that you see from people that they've experienced more than any other things, whether it be like sexual abuse, drug use, or you know, what is it? What is a common issue that seems to pop up with a lot of people that you treat over the last few years here?
Yeah, great. Yeah, you know, I would say the symptoms are so varied, like the symptoms that kind of create the suffering that has people reach out to me and start working with me. There are so many. There can be physical symptoms. I don't know, chronic fatigue and tension in the body and, you know, insomnia, like so many things. There can be energetic phenomena that mostly they're just emotional difficulties that people have. They have anger issues. They feel depressed, all kinds of things. Here's the thing, though, where the commonality is in the deep structure. And that goes right back to what we've been talking about, the impact of complex trauma, early childhood trauma, on the level of the nervous system, on the level of the emotions, and on the level of the identity. People are largely functioning from adaptive survival patterns, and they're not really connected to the deep, authentic core. And that is the suffering. And they may not be able to put those kinds of words to it like I just did. They may not know why that is, but they hurt and they suffer and something feels off. And apparently they've also had that kind of awareness that you shared with us about a minute ago, that, oh, I'm suffering and there's something wrong and I can do something about it. Otherwise they wouldn't be reaching out to me. So there's some kind of a search for their wholeness again, some kind of I don't need to repeat myself, like a search for their wholeness again. And the root of it lies in the adaptive survival strategies they had to develop as children and then end up carrying forward into their adulthood.
Very good. Very, very good. What would you say is one of the most important characteristics or traits that is missing in society, humanity, that we need to heal and to get along and to unite as one? Like for me, I personally think it's the compassion, you know, and empathy for others. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. In so many ways, it's that, and certainly together is probably the main thing. Together, this work we cannot do alone. No way. You know, this deep like root trauma work, especially the type of trauma like work that stems from childhood trauma. So basically, it's relational wounding that we carry. So the wound was created in connection with others. Therefore, the healing also has to happen in connection with others.
Wow.
So we cannot do this alone. That's clear. So the more fields we can create where we can come together intentionally to do this kind of healing work, and you know that is absolutely required. You mentioned about going to a retreat. You know, those kinds of spaces are super important. But there's so many different shapes of those spaces. But togetherness is key, and togetherness in a way that we can support each other in allowing ourselves to become vulnerable again, because that's what's required. Because here's the thing, you know, the pain that we all carry inside, that is what we're so busy trying to get away from. And that is what ends up like having us feel and act so confused. Because if I'm always on the run from my deep feelings, from my true self, then how can I ever really show up and sit quietly by myself and feel at peace? How can I ever really meet you fully if I'm so busy trying to manage my own internal experience, trying to run away from it because it hurts so much? So what we need is we have to create spaces in which we support each other to open up again to what's really here and to grieve together and to feel more deeply together and to hold hands in it together. You know, I think that more than anything is what's required. Can I share with you my favorite quote?
Yes, please.
By Tibetan Lama, I forgot, some kind of Rinpoche, I forgot who it was, but some Buddhist master, he says this, we are all children walking in this strange land between birth and death. None of us knows much. Best we can do is stay close and hold hands.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's just so beautiful, you know, I've quoted this so many times to groups, right? Yeah, so that's what's required. And then, so like, best we can do is stay close and hold hands. What I'm hearing in there is hold hands and invite each other, ourselves and each other, to drop back into the heart. That's where it all is. It's the heart. It's the heart of freedom, oneness, and love. That's the place where we can heal everything that has been hurting us so much.
Freedom, oneness, and love. That is so beautiful and so important. And that is my note for the day. I'm going to write that down and focus on that with great intention today. Freedom, oneness, and love. I'm going to share that with my family as well.
Oh, beautiful.
So I'm going to use that as a tool. That's what I'm going to do. Uh-huh. Now, let's talk about other tools. You know, as I told you, meditation is a tool that I use. Plant medicine with the ayahuasca as well. Are there any other tools or any tools that you recognize or recommend for people to use as they go through their journey, your healing process, or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, luckily we have so many amazing tools available to ourselves these days. You know, it's like, you know, as the world is so interconnected these days, you know, there's the most profound spiritual teachings that, you know, 100 years ago would be like kind of passed on in a secret kind of monastic tradition from one teacher to one student. Now it's like two clicks on YouTube. You can like drop into the deepest spiritual teachings of mankind. So many things are available to us. And I think it's extremely individual, you know, what works. So for you, meditation and plant medicine have been apparently the key catalysts. And for somebody else, it might be psychotherapy or like embodiment practices or a lot of time in nature or like a vision quest or Tai Chi Qigong or the yogic path. God knows there's so many paths that can support us in reconnecting with ourselves more deeply and like touching our own authentic core more deeply. And I think our job is to find out what really works best for us and then dig deeper there, you know?
Absolutely. Very good. Very good, Ralph. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Ralph, I have one final question for you, man. This has been a phenomenal interview. I thank you for your time. I thank you for being in this space with me and my audience today. I would like for you to tell us, and this is something I ask everyone that comes on the show, I like to call it a token of love. What is it that you think people need to hear in this very moment that they can use as they continue on their journey? You know, you've dropped so many gems today. So you've been doing that the entire show, but is there anything that comes to heart right now in this moment?
Yeah, you are not really most deeply who you tell yourself you are in your thoughts. You are not that. You are much more whole than that. You're in your true essence. You are actually free. And the habitual thoughts that you have come to learn about yourselves, challenge them, take a close look at them, bring awareness to them. Don't believe all these habitual thoughts about yourself and the world that you may have lived with your whole life. Mm. And open up to the possibility that underneath, around, behind these thoughts, there's your true essence that's way deeper, way more whole, way more at peace than any mental chatter or self-narrative can possibly touch.
Beautiful, beautiful. As you were saying that, I just kept hearing, find your peace. No, find your freedom. It's just, you know, everything you said, people do. It's so much, and we talked about it earlier, just so much freedom in that, right? And you find yourself in that wholeness, oneness, and love. Rob, thank you so much. Where can the good people find you? Websites, social media, any of that good stuff?
Yeah, my name, the social media thing, I'm not terribly active, but yeah, I'm findable on Facebook and Instagram, and my website is embodied-trauma-healing.com. And yeah, you're welcome to take a look. I have an ongoing online group where we explore these kinds of questions, working on like I said, the intersection between personal trauma work and spirituality. So yeah, please come take a look.
Excellent. And Ralph, is there anything else that you would like to share with us today?
Only my profound heartfelt gratitude to you for this conversation. I've loved every moment. I felt such a beautiful commonality and deep connection with you. I've loved how you showed up and the questions you asked. It's just been really, really wonderful. So big thanks.
Thank you, Ralph. You have been you have blessed us today with your knowledge and your presence. So thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And to the audience, I know you enjoyed this episode. Please check Ralph out online, learn about what he does. And if it's not for you, maybe it can be for someone else, you know, because there's a lot of trauma going on in this world. And there's a lot of people that need help. So bless you all. And remember to stay connected with us at thehiddengateway.com. Shoot us an email at support@thehiddengateway.com if you would like to chat. And thank you for pushing your mindset towards a better reality. This will conclude this week's episode. Until next time, stay positive, stay questioning, be love, and be free. The Hidden Gateway, out.